Thanks for listening to the Friday Live Extra from NET Radio, a weekly podcast featuring arts and humanities in Nebraska, and an online-only feature we produce in conjunction with our weekly radio show, Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall. Later in our podcast this week, we will meet singers involved in this year's Metropolitan Opera auditions. You can learn how they prepare for this annual event. We'll start this week, though, with Madeline Cass, who is from Nebraska, studied at the University of Nebraska, and who uses a variety of mediums to express herself. There's photography and drawing, video, installation work sometimes, even tattoos, and more. She was asked by the Platte Basin Time Lapse Project to create a book. We featured the PBT project on Friday Live and the Friday Live Extra a few times. The title of the book is How Lonely to Be a Marsh, and I can't wait to learn more from Madeline. Thanks for coming by our studios.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, the cover of this book right away is attention-grabbing to me. No title, no byline, there's no print on even the spine or the back. Simply this beautiful photograph of what looks like a bundle of grass that's reflected then in maybe still water, or at least it gives you that kind of impression. How did you decide on the design for your book?
The design of the book definitely played into how I wanted the work as a whole to be understood, and it took me a while to land on the idea that I even wanted to compile it into a book, but it is a way that I love thinking, and so in terms of the cover, I loved the kind of like expansiveness of this image and how without a horizon line and without any edges or any kind of a human reminder, we're kind of lost in like this heavenly space that's hard to understand. Yeah. And I took the picture on a really cold winter day. Was trekking around in my muck boots, which are kind of like my favorite marsh footwear. And it was a moment that struck me as being really powerful. And it was an image that, as I was developing the work into a book, my mentors, Mike Farrell and Mike Forsberg, they were both really struck by that image, as well as other people who kind of had some of the initial input about, yeah, this is the one, this is the cover.
When did Platte Basin Time Lapse commission the book?
I took a walk with Mike Forsberg out in the salt marshes for the first time in the summer of 2016, I believe. And after that, they saw a short documentary that I made with my friend Morgan while we were working at the Water for Food Institute. And so it was then that Forsberg approached me and said, hey, we'd really love to commission you to make a piece of artwork for us. And I think that was sometime further into 2017. So completing the body of work took me about 2 years. Yeah.
Now, you referenced the salt marshes, so we should probably have you explain for listeners exactly what place it is that we're talking about.
Yeah, it's amazing because I've lived in Lincoln on and off for the majority of my life, and it took me about 25 years to actually get out into the salt marshes and know what they were. One way that I like to describe it to people is if you drive north all the way to the end of 27th Street and take a right, you're pretty much there. That's where Frank Shoemaker Marsh is, and that's one of the easiest segments of it to find. And so the history of the salt marshes is intrinsically tied to the history of white settlement in this area. So it was originally these salt marshes, or sometimes referred to also as saline wetlands, mm-hmm. That their salty water, the Morton family came here and wanted to extract the salt out of the marshes and eventually gave up, realizing that the brine extraction process, there wasn't enough fuel here to be boiling water. There's not enough trees here to be doing that method of salt extraction. So eventually they moved on to the underground salt caves near Hutchinson, Kansas, and established their operation there because the salt was easier to extract. But by that time, the village of Lancaster, which eventually formed into the city of Lincoln, and so they are kind of why we live here in my mind.
Yeah.
And a lot of people have never been there and don't know much about them. So a large goal of this work is to help people locally hopefully get more interested in spending time there. So I love to take friends and family out, and or anyone really, take them out there with me and go on a walk and kind of explore. And it's a really amazing place.
The desire for salt. And, yeah. it created a settlement that continues in many parts of Lincoln, actually, with mascots for various teams. And there's a Salt Creek and all kinds of things. But yeah, you're right. I don't know that we think too much about where marshes are. People tend to go to rivers or they see lakes, but they don't travel to a marsh. Why do you think that is?
I think people don't know how to interact with it oftentimes, because it's not like a place where there's necessarily recreation in a way that we normally think about. But for me, the mode of recreation there is walking, and is finding meditation through walking. And that's where the muck boots come in important, because then you can kind of trek through the wetter parts of it. But even so, there are paths and roads through some of them that are good for walking as well, if you don't have wet shoes. But but yeah, I think they're kind of a subtle place, and they don't have this sort of obvious beauty that we sort of tend to seek out when we're going to wild spaces.
Right.
But I've definitely fallen in love with marshes.
So it's interesting you said meditation, because I've opened this to page 19, which I was looking at earlier, where it says marsh meditation. Mm-hmm. Would you mind? It's a short little excerpt. Would you mind reading that?
Yeah. Marsh meditation. Walk until you find a patch of salt. Sit or stand, whatever is more comfortable. Feel the minerality, gritty and soft. Taste the salt, remembering ancient oceans.
Yeah, and Nebraska at one time was covered by an ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
A really long time ago. Thanks for reading that.
You're welcome.
This book, in your first run, sold out.
Yeah.
What did you think when that happened?
It was super exciting. I realized I wished I would have printed more of them, so now I have. It's in its second printing, and it seems like there's been a lot of interest from both kind of a broader photography community that I am a part of, but also on a local level. So I guess that brings us to I'm doing a book signing on December 20th from 5 to 6 p.m. at Francie and Finch.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Leslie, for hosting. And looking forward to hopefully, you know, getting the book into more hands locally.
Yeah.
And
when you meet with people who have seen and read the book or looked through its pictures already, what are the things that they're most curious about, do you find?
I think they're curious then to go there and kind of see the ways that I've been interacting with it, and like, what does that experience look like? And yeah, what is a marsh? Have I ever been to one? I don't really know. I mean, there's a broad variety of questions, and there's a lot of, like what I just read, there's a lot of poems throughout the book. So kind of what inspired the poems and how they interact with the photographs, and then all of the kind of biological and zoological specimens that are there as well. Frank Shoemaker himself, whom the marsh is named for, was a big influence for this book because he was a photographer as well in the early 1900s. So I actually worked in the archives of the University of Nebraska in Love Library, and I'm so grateful for their support of this project as well. And they helped me gain access to some of Frank's photographs, which are also in the book. So there's a kind of a lot of sort of mysterious interaction between these older photographs and mine. And so it's like, where did these come from? And I just think there's a lot of layers that are sort of revealed. And I hope that people continue to go back to it and sort of see the scope to which I've sort of tried to understand this place from different perspectives.
Yeah. And Madeline, you have a dedication that's in the back of the book. I do find it interesting that as you experience this book, those photos aren't labeled as you look throughout. Sometimes you turn a page and you're like, am I reading a poem? Am I reading a journal entry? There is a lot of discovery to be made. And then when you finally get to the back of the book, that's where you've got your copyright, your dedication. There's kind of a list here.
Some footnotes.
And footnotes of what we've seen throughout the book. So it's a really interesting way to organize a book.
Yeah.
You've really forced the person going through it to think about something other than those labels and titles.
Yeah.
And just wonder about the photo or the writing itself first.
Definitely.
Well, congratulations on that. It looks lovely.
Thank you so much.
Let's see. You mentioned that you're going to be at Francie and Finch. So again, that's December 20th. I'm sure we could talk even more about this book, but I'll leave something for others to ask you at that event, right? And you said 5 o'clock.
Yep.
On December 20th, Francie and Finch in Lincoln. Madeline Cass is the poet, writer, creator of How Lonely to Be a Marsh. Madeline, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
For the second half of our podcast this week, we get to talk about this year's Metropolitan Opera auditions. Nebraska is one of the hosts of those auditions. There are a few across the country. And joining me to talk about that today are Talia Block, who is publicity chair for that event, along with singers Elena Matthews and Sarah Warner. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Now, these auditions, the public can go and witness what happens, right?
Yes.
They're open to all.
And they take place at Nebraska Wesleyan University's auditorium there. Is that in the O'Donnell?
The O'Donnell Auditorium.
And that is at 10 a.m. on Saturday, December 14th. So let's do kind of an audience side and on the audition stage side for this, just to get a visual. So as an audience member, when you show up, what can you expect to see happening?
Well, you'll just see an auditorium filled with people eager to hear some great music from some young singers. You'll get a program that has a list of all of the things that the judges could pick. And then it's great fun trying to guess what the judges will pick, because the singers get to start with their first piece of their choice, and then the judges just pick one from the remaining four, and sometimes you're right and sometimes you're wrong.
And we've had winners here in Nebraska in the past, right?
So every year they pick a winner or winners. Uh-huh. Sometimes up to three people could go that I've seen. And then they go to St. Paul, and that's the regional competition. After the regional competition, then they go to New York City. And so we'll see what happens this year.
Okay. So it's kind of a journey after the Nebraska auditions. And who are the judges this year?
This year we have Vera Lucia Calabria, who's the stage director and teacher at California State University, Gregory Carpenter, who's the general and artistic director at Opera Colorado, and Garnet Bruce, who's the artistic advisor at Opera San Antonio and the resident stage director at Peabody Conservatory for Johns Hopkins University.
Well, now, for our podcast today, we have a couple of singers who are participating this year. Elena Matthews, you are one of those. You did your undergrad at UNL.
I did.
And you also teach these days, right?
Yes. I started my own voice and piano studio here in town. I have about 7 teachers that work for me, and we travel to people's homes and teach in their homes.
So is this the first year you've auditioned?
This is not the first year I've auditioned. This is the second time that I've auditioned. It's been a few years, but I've done it before.
So when did you start preparing for your audition?
Well, that's an interesting question, because the arias that I am taking to the audition, I have been working on for over a year. So they are arias that I take to several different auditions and have performed. So they're not specifically for this audition. This is my package that I take whenever I go out to audition.
I kind of get a picture in my head of a recipe box.
Yes.
You just draw the right combination of ingredients for this particular audition. Well, Sarah Warner, you are also singing this year. Is this your first year?
No, it's been a hot minute. I auditioned as a senior at the University of Nebraska in 2012, I think. Yeah, 2012. But I haven't done the auditions in quite some time. But I'm excited to be back this year and give it a shot.
And are you from Nebraska originally?
No. Well, I'm a military brat, so I've been around the United States and Europe, and I found myself in Nebraska for high school, and I went to the University of Nebraska here, and then I got a master's degree from University of Minnesota, and found myself back here after I got married, and it's a great place to be, a great community to sing for. It's a very enthusiastic arts community in both Omaha and Lincoln, and I live in Omaha currently.
So what was your audition prep experience like?
It's pretty similar to Elena's. I have a package of audition repertoire pieces that I sing every year. And it's been kind of interesting over the last few years kind of refining that package as my voice grows, as I change as a person, trying to decide what best represents me to an audition panel. And the pieces that I'm singing now are quite different from what I was singing just even a few years ago. So as my voice grows, as I kind of figure myself out, it's been a fun journey to figure out what is going to best represent me and what my skills are. Yeah. So it's been lovely.
So Elena and Sarah, for both of you, what are your hopes then when this happens on December 14th? What do you hope to get out of it?
Well, one thing that's really nice is that no matter what happens with these auditions, you get feedback from the judges afterwards. So you get to meet with each one of them individually, and they will give you tips about what to do going forward. And just if they think that these are good arias for you, if you should change a few things, what you need to do in your presentation. So no matter what happens, you get that advice, professional advice from them. So that's something that I am looking forward to. I hope that this will also give me just a little bit more audition experience underneath my belt as I am getting ready to emerge out into the real world of professional auditions. This is very good practice for that. Uh-huh. So no matter what happens, I will have that experience.
How about for you, Sarah?
Yeah, very similar. Very similar. It's great to get good feedback from people who are in the industry and people that you'll be potentially singing for in the future. It's such a subjective art form, and it's getting as much feedback as possible and then being able to pick and choose kind of what feels right for you is invaluable as an artist. And I'm really looking forward to that. It'd be nice to win some money, but I'm kidding. But I'm not, though.
Well, in addition to the auditions on the 14th, there's a masterclass that happens, too. And this year, it is named for a gentleman who is a longtime supporter of the arts in Lincoln, Kai Roman. Tell me a little bit about the masterclass and what happens there for people who don't know.
Yeah, the masterclass is held on Sunday, December 15th, usually in the afternoon hours. You should check our website for details on that. It changes sometimes. right now, it's supposed to be at noon. Mm-hmm. And we have one of the judges. This year, it'll be Vera Lucia Calabria come in. And although you get feedback on Saturday from the judges, they don't work with you in like a musical setting. Mm-hmm. So there will be an accompanist there to play with you, and then she can stop you and fix some things, give you really hands-on advice. And we do this every year, and it's just a really great experience.
And then I understand there's some awards as well?
Yes. We have four awards. So the winners obviously get some money. But then in addition to the winners, we have the Opera Omaha Guild Award, the Lincoln Friends of Opera Award, the Gary Jones Memorial Award, and the William D. Stieber Memorial Award.
Okay, yeah, and William Stieber, for listeners who've been longtime NET Radio listeners, know that he was the previous music director and previous host of Friday Live, so a great honor to have his name on an award as well. Well, I'm just thinking the audience can show up whenever. How do the people who audition, though, choose to participate? When do they have to sign up for this? What's kind of that process?
The latest date for our auditions was December 2nd. You had to have all of your materials in, so, I mean, it's pretty recent, but lots of them get their materials in October, November. They're prepared. They know what they need to do.
Well, anything else you think you want to highlight about this year's Met Opera auditions?
I'll mention that this year, Elizabeth Grimpo is our collaborative pianist, and she is a professor at Concordia University. So we are excited to hear her join these singers.
Well, best of luck to the two of you, Elena and Sarah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thanks to all three of you for being here. Talia Block, Elena Matthews, and Sarah Warner were all here to talk about this year's Metropolitan Opera auditions happening at O'Donnell Auditorium at Nebraska Wesleyan University. That's 10 a.m. December 14th, and we'll have a link to more on the Friday Live page as well so people can find it there. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Friday Live Extra is a weekly podcast from NET Radio. Production help from Dave Hughes. Our theme music is by Alexios Anest. You can learn more about people and groups involved in arts and humanities in Nebraska by listening to Friday Live, broadcast statewide each week on NET Radio, streaming audio and video online at netnebraska.org, and also available as a podcast. I'm Genevieve Randall.